several miles off the main highway, tucked away in a secluded canyon on prime vineyard property, stands a rustic barn that was built many decades before the vines around it were planted. In that barn, a sophisticated broadcast and recording studio has been built. The barn also has a well-hidden root cellar stocked with many of the world's most exceptional wines, only to be shared with guests who secretly come to offer their insights and tell their stories. Guests are sworn to secrecy and are shuttled to the studio aboard a John Deere tractor. Those who cannot make the journey in person are interviewed by satellite hookup, and sometimes the crew simply sneaks away with microphones in hand and interviews guests in barrel rooms, wine cellars, and other magical places. All of this is done like clockwork every single week, so that we can bring you another episode of Grape Encounters Radio.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow.
And it is time for your weekly Grape Encounter, and I would love, and I mean really love, for you to see where I am sitting today. It's a place that I have always wanted to go to. I finally discovered it about 4 or 5 weeks ago. I can't say I discovered it. I discovered it personally. And you've heard me talk about this winery a number of times on the show. In fact, several months ago, you heard me talk to one of the members of the family that is now sitting around the table with me. It is the Chapelet family, and I have with me today only 3 of 6 siblings. It is a really big family. The Chapelets, of course, were one of the foundation families in the Napa Valley. They are known worldwide. They make some of the finest wines that I have ever tasted at very fair, if not low, costs for what the wines are. They are so tremendously amazing, and they keep the prices approachable. But today I have with me Cyril Chapelet. And Cyril, welcome to the show.
David, thank you for being here. It's wonderful to have you up here in our part of the world. Couldn't be a more gorgeous day as we look out over the vineyard.
And this is a very special, and I guess I would say, expect to say, a somber day for the Chapelet family. And maybe perhaps you could explain why.
Well, it happens to be the 22nd of May. And the 22nd of May was when my father and all of our father and my mother's husband passed away last year. And he was the founder. It was his vision. Everything that we have around us is due to his complete dedication to the vineyard, to the winery, to the whole process that we are here. And it was due to his imagination that we ended up being here.
And I think one of the most amazing things is you have now reached your 50-year anniversary, which is an amazing milestone to think that this family was here when really it all started. And I say when it all started, when the real business of wine started in the Napa Valley.
Well, I'd say that it's a little bit interesting because 1967, the families that were here were some of the same families that had been here since Prohibition. And 1967 was when Mr. Mondavi built his winery, and in 68 we built our winery. And those are the first two new wineries since Prohibition to be built in the Napa Valley. So
you actually were number two.
Number two in the Napa Valley for a new winery in the Valley.
It's so amazing.
If you think of the great old names, the Martinis, the Krugs, the Behringers, these families are still around the Valley. Many of those people are still in the Valley, but most of them don't own their wineries anymore. So it's a very different game. It's a very corporate game, although it's very personal because there's more private small wineries than there ever were before. But at that time, there were 32 operating wineries total.
I want to now introduce your mom and one of the co-founders of the winery, Molly Chapelet. And Molly, I would imagine a very tough day for you.
Actually, David, we're happy to have you, by the way. But I'm feeling a sense of joy, and I continue to feel that way because we have nothing except happiness when we think about Don and what he gave to all of our family personally, and really what he gave to the industry, and the joy that we have been able to have because of his vision. So it really, we were going to think of it as a happy day.
Did you ever expect that things would last this long?
And of now, course I did.
You did,
well,
okay.
We were here for the duration.
You were there
here for the
long term,
yeah.
And now you've got a bunch of grandkids, and you've got all adult children, and 6 of them, so you really covered your bet on that one.
Oh yeah, that was intelligent, wasn't it?
And then most are very involved in, you know, different levels, I guess, but the involvement is very deep. It's all family run, right?
It's very real. Sometimes they get a little bit too involved, if that's possible.
Do they wrestle in the living room sometimes?
Yes, of course.
Well, let's introduce two more that are at the table. Carissa is here from Big Sur.
Hi, David. Nice to be here. Nice to have you here.
It's nice to see you, too. And I got a chance to meet you last night. By the way, I got to sit around the table. The table is like 90 feet long. And when the whole family comes in, it's not really 90 feet, but it looks like
60,
it.
I think.
Yeah. Let's just say you can't talk to somebody on the other end unless you have a megaphone. But anyway, just talk a little bit about your involvement in the family, because you're deeply involved, but you're not here every day. But you work like as other members of the family do, you know, from a satellite base.
Right. Thank goodness for the internet and phones. That helps make it so that I can live in Big Sur, and I come up to the Napa Valley about once a month. But my role is I'm the legal director for the company, and so I spend a lot of my time making sure that the company can continue generation to generation. So getting through the estate planning hurdles, and then whatever else is legal comes across my desk, and I try to make sure it gets to the right person.
There's no legal issues in the wine business.
No. We work hard to protect our trademark of Pritchard Hill, which is the mountain that you're on, and that's been something that I look after as well.
Let's say something about where we're at right now. We're out in this beautiful setting that is enjoyed by, I guess, family members and mosquitoes, right?
You did pick the mosquito day.
I picked them. I'm sitting here slapping them, but the gardens around the house are just magnificent, and Mom has been responsible, I guess, for the bulk of that, right? How long back can you remember her working in the gardens and doing all of the remodeling stuff that makes this such a special place?
Probably from the moment she stepped foot here, she began planting. When did these trees get planted?
Actually, the two trees Carissa was just looking at are redwood trees, and they were here, but they were only 8 feet tall. I think they're over 100 feet tall now.
Oh, my gosh.
But most of the trees we planted, that's all we did immediately, was things that were necessary. And it was shade we needed because we had no trees here except for the three major oaks, totally bare.
Is that right?
And it was very, very hot, David. We had no insulation in the house, so we quickly put on a little trellis. So we camouflaged and we patched the house and we made it work for us, and we actually loved it after we lived in it. And then we started planting, and everything was necessity or serendipity. So we needed food for our children, and going down to the nearest market was a chore with all those little squirming bodies in the car back and forth. So we decided we have all this land. Of course, we should be growing everything that we need and want to eat. So we put in fruit orchards, we put in vegetables, and that became our life.
Yep. You were really close to self-sufficient then.
Yes, I think with the exception of milk, and I traded a friend of mine down in the valley, I traded him wine for milk and butter and cream.
I think he got the better deal.
I thought I did.
Oh my gosh, I've got one more person to introduce, and she's somebody that I've known for a really long time. Alexa Chapelet was a student of mine when I was teaching at Pepperdine University. What was it, like 5 years ago?
I wish.
Yeah, but I was a speech and debate teacher, and she was one of my students, and I was actually very young for a teacher. In fact, I think I was the youngest teacher that I'd ever taught there. And when I met you and I heard the Chapelet name, I immediately remembered, you know, that I had tried this wine, and it was exciting to have, wow, a member of a winemaking family. I didn't really know much about the winery then, but of course in life discovered it and it became a favorite of mine. But you and I did an interview, I said several months ago, but I think it was probably more like a year or so ago. And what a privilege that was. Did you ever think that we would see each other eye to eye again? Thank you, Facebook.
David, it's been a great journey, and it's great to have you back again in our family's life, and also to introduce you to the rest of my family. And I know we knew each other in college, but what's really great is to have you up at the property to really see the person that you met. Now you really know who I am because of my family.
And what you became, and I take full credit for that, having taught you. No. But yes, you know, sometimes the reality is even better than our fantasies. And when I've been able to explore this property, it's such a magnificent, beautiful place with amazing gardens that you can't imagine, amazing structures, even the winery itself. I want to give this to Cyril for a second. Your dad and Mom created a winery that architecturally was so far ahead of its time, and it's really remained largely the same, has it not? And can you explain the shape of it and how it relates to the logo? I know that you've been asked that question question a million times, but we'll ask it a million and one.
Perfect. Well, you know, it's interesting because we were just little kids running around when my parents and their artist friends designed a building that would hopefully be a great building to make wine in, but also had to be aesthetically pleasing and not take away from the beautiful property that they had bought. And at that time, I don't think we ever expected to have the guests and the people really visit. It was really about having our employees and ourselves have a beautiful place to build their craft. And so the building has remained virtually exactly the same as it was when it was originally built. And so nothing has really changed over the years on that building. We have added an additional building next to it in a way of putting that building lower in the ground so that it doesn't take away from the magnificent building, which is a triangular pyramid. And the logo is virtually an aerial view of that triangular pyramid. So if you look down on the winery from above, that's what it would look like, and that's what our logo is. So when you see that little red logo on all of our bottles, that symbolizes the winery in the building.
About a million people just now went, oh, I get it.
It is so interesting because people come into the winery and they'll be asking the question, and they've been buying our wines for years. And you're right, it is an aha moment when they come in and they look up and go, oh, all these angles? Ah, this is interesting.
I get it.
They get it.
Let's take a quick break because I want to talk more about not just wine, but all of the other things that are a big part of the Chapelet brand, the things that you don't see. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters right after this.
And now, Grape Encounters with David Wilson continues.
Meet me in the vineyard. Where we'll dance under the moon. We'll leave our tears in the vines, the hustle of life behind. Darling, meet me in the vineyard tonight.
We are back with Grape Encounters Radio, coming to you from the top of Pritchard Hill in the Napa Valley. Really, I can't imagine a more beautiful setting really in the world. A lot of it is the craftsmanship of the Chapelet family that have transformed an already beautiful place into a place that is beyond really description. This is when you want to be on television. But Molly Chapelet is here, and we've got music in the background. So incredibly beautiful, and it definitely bears explanation on this day.
Well, I hope some of your listeners can hear a little bit of it. It's a flute playing now, and perhaps you'll hear some of that in the background. But it happened the day after Don passed. I was feeling rather hollow. We were happy that he made a beautiful transition the day before, and the children were all here. But the next morning I woke up, and it wasn't the same. I felt empty, and I felt there should be bells ringing from this valley. Nobody knows that Don has passed, and nobody knows what a great man he was. He was a very silent and a very humble man. And so I called quickly to my oldest son, Cyril, who's our CEO, and I said, Cyril, there should be bells ringing from Pritchard Hill. There should be church bells letting the world know. And Cyril answered, and I thought he would say,
of course, Mom, we can't do that. But I didn't, did I?
He didn't. He said, that's a great idea, Mom. I'll call Dominic.
Really? So that was your reaction to it. If Mom wants that, that's what we're going to do.
So, you know, I've been in the mountain country of Italy. I've been in the mountain country of Spain when major things happen and when a dignitary has passed or something. And on a Sunday afternoon when the bells are ringing from one village to the next, so I got it immediately. I mean, I really understood exactly what Mother wanted to do.
That was great.
You know, so I understood what that was. The question was, how do we do it? And that then becomes my job as CEO, is to delegate. So I delegated to my brother Dominic, who's a very IT kind of guy and could figure this stuff out. And then it was just a matter of calling everybody you knew who had great sound equipment and everything you could do to try to get the equipment. And so my responsibility and Dominic's responsibility was to get the equipment here. Mother's responsibility is to try to figure out what you wanted to hear.
That was the problem.
And let's talk about what you came up with, because this story is so beautiful. I couldn't contain myself when you told me the first time. Just share that.
Well, when Cyril said, Mom, I'll get the sound, you get the music, I thought, oh, now I'm in trouble. Where do I get the music? I don't have any bells. And I remembered a friend that I had worked with who was a sound technician and a musician. And I immediately called Chris Hedge. And Chris was very sad to hear that Don had passed. He knew him well, and he knew what a great man he was. And he paused when I asked him about, did you have a recording of church bells? And he was silent. I thought, oh, he doesn't have any church bells. Now what do I do? He said, I'll be there as soon as I can get there. And he drove all the way from Half Moon Bay, which is about 3 hours, appeared here with a musician that he had picked up along the way, someone I had introduced him to a few years before, Matt Eckel, a great flautist. And he said, I presented Matt on the way with a special flute. It was the alto flute that belonged to Paul Horn, the greatest flute player in the world. And he said, today, Matt, you're going to play for Don Chapelet on Paul Horn's flute. And so that was how it all happened. When they came to our big new room, and they sat down at our table that you had dinner at last night, and Chris started with his little machine, which was about 5 inches big, to play some church bells for me while I had the earphones on. And as he played the bells, we designed the kind of bells that we wanted to hear, because there are a lot of different sounds of bells, which I hadn't even known. I just heard bells in my head. I didn't know there were many different ones. So he proceeded to put this music together, which I hope we can record for your listeners. And then he gave the flute to Matt Eckel. And Matt sat there for a moment, and I know he was thinking, well, now let's see, can I practice for a moment? And Chris said, sure, just go ahead. And so he started playing, and that moment, Chris had the inspiration to press the button, and he recorded this sound that Matt was just starting to get to know the instrument. It's the most beautiful one-minute piece I've ever heard. I hope your listeners can hear part of it.
Well, they can hear it in the background. I want to go for a second to Carissa, because, you know, like all of the siblings have a great appreciation for your mom's meticulousness. How perfect does it have to be in your mind for your mom to put her seal of approval on it and for it to be okay? And especially when we're talking about something like this that is absolutely sacred and maybe one of the most important things that she's ever created.
I think you sort of answered the question in the way you asked it.
I know. You're a lawyer, so it's, what is that called? Begging the question? Or
that was terrific. Well, just to give you a little more insight, once they got the music created, then Mom wanted to hear it from different aspects. And so Mom ran up to the top of the vineyard and seen the vineyard above us. We were huffing and puffing trying to catch up with her. She wanted to hear it from up there and hear what it sounded like from the different places and the vineyard. And so this idea of not only perfection, but her expanded vision and what she was trying to create.
So Mom's running everywhere. And what did you think when you finally got to hear it?
Well, I was totally quiet because it was the most magnificent thing I'd ever heard. But this child that just spoke about Mom running up the hill, she was running up the hill. And what she did that day was extraordinary. And so we're all listening. I'm listening with the flautist. The sound technician, Chris, is there. He ran back down because he wanted to make some improvements on it. I just sat there in awe. And then I looked around at Carissa, and she's looking at her iPhone. And I thought, how can you do that on this day when we're just here doing this music? And she's looking on her iPhone, and she's looking around. And I thought, she's not just here playing it. She was actually writing a poem about this moment.
Oh, wow. That's well.
Well, that moment was captured on my iPhone. And
we could actually post that. Where were you when this was happening, Alexa? And what did you think about all this?
That day, I was pretty much right by my mom's side. And I think I was just absorbing and being overwhelmed by the love of our family and the beauty that Mom and Dad had created. And so grateful that we could honor my dad in this way and this beautiful property and with my mom's added touch of the bells and the music. And yeah. I think I was just right there, absolutely in the moment for each of my family and for myself.
Did it make it easier for all of you
to be with each other?
Yeah, I mean, just the way that day came together.
I don't know that easy is even a word that should be put in there. It was difficult, but it was so much love and passion and just shows what this family is to each other.
We're going to come back in just a second. We are at the family home, the Chapelet family. They were the second winery to open after Prohibition here in the Napa Valley. They are a name that, let me put it to you this way, the Chapelets don't just make wine. They make history. And they've been doing that for 50 years. It's their 50-year anniversary this year. It's the one-year anniversary of the passing of Don Chapelet. And I know, Molly, you said that a lot of people didn't know his contribution earlier. I think that people who really love wine absolutely know his contribution and are listening with great intent today because they want to know more about what went on behind the scenes and what goes on behind the scenes at the Chapelet operation. So we'll be back with more Grape Encounters right after this. Hang with me.
We know you do your level-headed best to catch every episode of Grape Encounters Radio, but in the event you've ever missed something and want to play catch-up, we keep every single episode archived online at grapeencounters.com. Not only can you listen online, you can also explore the remarkable ensemble of goodies we've put there just for you. It's not just a public service, it's how they raise enough dough to pay me. Yeah, I'm just saying. Welcome back to Grape Encounters, where we like to think of every wine country as home. However, our studios are located in the very friendly town of Atascadero, California, where fine wine can be found in every direction, which means you never really need directions to get anywhere you really want to go.
We are back with Grape Encounters Radio on the top of Pritchard Hill, out in the beautiful sunshine and in the beautiful gardens, talking to the majority of members of the Chapelet family, I think, and on the one-year anniversary of the passing of Don Chapelet, who started this business along with Molly 50 years ago. Cyril, it's been a year now. How do you feel about how the winery has run in that year? How well have the siblings filled shoes that probably can never be filled, but how is it going?
Well, it's interesting. I think we had 50 years of preparation. I mean, this is my father's dream, that we would be able to be in a position that the business would continue on. And I had been the CEO for a couple of years prior to my father passing. My father had decided to give up the mantle of CEO, right. And I had been in that position. There was never a dinner conversation. There was never a meeting or anything else that happened around our family that we weren't included in, and always expecting that at some point you would come to serve and try to help make this thing work. And it happened to be that I was the one that was chosen to do that, and at this level. And I can't speak to that without speaking about the incredible structure and people that my father put in place. So
yeah.
To think that any one of us, or that our family has done this on our own, that would be a very misguided direction. I think that it's been due to the dedication of people that my father was able to find and get to rally around, from winemaking, from vineyard management. The lady that you met this morning, actually, Socorro Rodriguez, who's been with us for 48 years of the 50 years that we've been here.
Wow.
Her husband has been running our vineyards for the same period of time. So that is the magic. And so the whole thing is, how do you hold that together and give them the inspiration to take on even a stronger role and be even more involved and more direct, has been marvelous. And one of the things that I've heard from Dad my whole life, every time we get a good score, his comment was, oh, there's way better to come. I'm expecting you guys to continue to stretch further and even make even better wines. And he said, I'm looking forward to the excitement, enthusiasm 15 or 20 years from now, when you're all talking about how much better and how much greater the wines are, because we know more about the property even then. He said, I would have thought that we had met our pinnacle years ago, but I've seen us continue to eclipse that. So with that direction, it's made it very easy to keep reaching for making better and better wines. The challenge has been, though, for us now, is making these great wines and keeping the prices reasonable, because the price of our grapes have gone up so expensively and the cost of our farming has got so expensive. So we have all these added challenges to still trying to keep a reasonably priced wine in a market that's very, very competitive, and there's so many fabulous wines being made.
Well, I've tasted so many of your wines recently, and they're so amazing. I want to just throw this out really quickly for anybody that wants to answer this. How much do you think the values of this family, the love in this family, the character of this family, how much is reflected in the wines? Because I have always said on this show, and some people, I think, look at me like I'm crazy when I say this, but I really believe if you know the winemaker, you know the family, you'll understand the wine better. The personality of wineries, of winemaking people, rather, really does seem to find its way in the bottle. How do you feel about that concept?
I'm going to answer that one, David, because I put my stamp on one of my favorite wines here, our Malbec, and I added my dragon to it. So just added just what you're talking about, a touch of my magic, which is in art. And just to segue back to my father, he was my greatest proponent of the dragons. He proofread my dragon book about the dragons of Pritchard Hill and just championed that we showcase these dragons and his encouragement of that creativity mixed in with the great grapes that we grow and created here. So,
do the dragons accurately reflect the nature of the wine in that bottle?
Actually, this year I had a funny thing happen. The dragon, that the one that's being labeled right now, got kicked back from the label approval company.
From TTB.
Yes, because I had said that this dragon that is depicted on the bottle, he's a professor and he's known for creating magical elixirs. Well, you can't put elixir on a bottle of wine, even though it was the dragon that I was talking about, not necessarily, but perhaps his magical touch did get into this bottle.
So no elixir in that bottle. Did you want to add something, Alexa?
No, I think that Carissa touched on something of my father championing all of us and championing not only our art, but our love of the property. And 50 years of growing up here, David, all of us ran through the vineyard. We rode horses through the vineyard. We picked the grapes. We were in the vineyard constantly. So yes, every bit of wine has some stamp of all of us, because we lived this property. And I do strongly believe that there is a lot of Chapelets, my father included, in every single bottle of wine.
You've got to put your stamp on these wines. What do you think is the most significant mark that Don left? One that stands out to you that really made a difference in the wine industry and what we enjoy today? Is there anything that really sticks out in your mind?
From the beginning, it was this strange passion and desire to have a hillside vineyard. And people couldn't understand that. When he first came up here, even the realtors, he said, I only want to look at hillside properties. And they said, well, why? You're looking for a house site so you can see the view? He said, no, I want to grow grapes. And they said, well, there are only 3 or 4 hillside vineyards up here. And he said, are any of them for sale? We did look at a couple of them. And he said, well, I don't care if it has a vineyard, just show me some hillside property that would be appropriate for a vineyard. And we were very lucky to find this piece that had a vineyard already planted, and that although it was newly planted, only 3-year-old vines, which was perfect for us. We had the first crop, but it had been a vineyard 150 years ago. So 150 years ago, you know, they were making fine wines in the Napa Valley. They were exporting them to France and getting good prices in those days for the prices that were current. And so we were really, really lucky that we didn't have to tear up our beautiful woods to plant the vineyard. Someone else did that, because there are woods all around us.
Were there remnants of those grapes still here?
Not of those grapes, but the outline of the vineyard was still here. It still is.
So you can see the footprint of it.
Yes, and we have it on the surveying back in 1861, 62, shows the footprint exactly of the vineyard that was here.
Cyril, one last question for you. You ultimately manage, you know, whether a wine becomes a Chapelet wine or not. I know that in this world, there are so many winemakers, and you talked about the big ones that started when you started that have become behemoths and probably are not owned by the original families. Many of them strive to make the wines very much the same from year to year. What's the Chapelet philosophy in terms of the sameness of wines? How consistent does it have to be? Or, you know, who's driving the ship, the winemaker or the grapes?
Well, 100%. We have this term we use, terroir, which is all the flavors that come from the soil, the earth, the wind, the sun, all the different things that make the flavor in that grape taste like where it came from. So speaking about where it comes from is probably the most critical thing. And so I think it's the job of our winemaking team, and I believe they think it very clearly, is that their job is to make the very utmost of the grapes that we have here on Pritchard Hill and doing what they can do to accentuate that and not take away from that. This is very different than the vodka business or the tequila business or any of those other elixirs or spirits that are made, that you have to do the same thing every single year. And people expect when they buy Smirnoff that Smirnoff tastes exactly the same every year. I don't know if there's really much flavor in Smirnoff or any of the rest of those things, but that's certainly not the case in the kind of wines we're making. It's about the expression of what's happening in that vintage and how we get the very most out of it and try to make it so that when somebody tastes our Pritchard Hill Cabernet, it has the structure and the strength of what they know is Pritchard Hill and what they know and they come to love. And we have to know enough about our wines to create some thread of that in every wine year in and year out. And we have very, very strong cuts as to what wines end up in the very best and which grapes end up in the very, very best wines and which barrel selections end up in the very best. And that's really done by a panel of experts, and many times I'm in that panel of the tasting panels, but winemakers who've been here for years. Our winemaker currently has been here for 33 years.
Wow.
Most of the staff is working with him have been here for 17, 18 years who are tasting these wines. But one of the issues that we have to be very careful is, we spoke about this, you and I, last night, about becoming tunnel vision or thinking that you're doing it so right because you're only tasting your own wines, and you start believing that you've got the answer. You've got to be able to be broad enough that you're tasting lots of other things,
right.
And also you might bring people from the outside to help make sure that we're not being tunnel vision, make sure that we really are getting the flavors and the structures out of these that we're trying to. So 100%, the answer to your question does start with the vineyard, and then it moves from there. So it's going to be different in year in and year out. The challenge for us is the press likes it some years better than the others, and they can really make a big difference. And luckily, we've been very, very supported by the press the last several years. We've gotten very high scores. So that's been very helpful. But I think that it speaks to something we've been doing for a very long time.
Well, if they don't like it, it's just fake news.
Anyway, okay.
No, I tell you, I really appreciate what you're saying, because I think it reflects a true respect for a balance between what you produce here, but also what people are going to love the most. And I think you have to have flexibility in the wine business. If you want to make factory-made wines, that's fine. That's not for me, and we really don't talk about them here. We're going to be back with more Grape Encounters in just a moment. We have a few minutes left to spend here on Pritchard Hill. Well, I'm actually going to stay for a while. In fact, I probably never am going to go home. In fact, I'm going to talk a bit with Carissa about adoption papers, because you're a lawyer. But we'll be back with more from the Chapelet property here and the vineyards on Pritchard Hill. We'll be back in just a second. With Grape Encounters Radio, and this is one of those moments that I really wish I could share hours and hours and hours with you from where I'm at right now. I spent the night in a cabin on the Chapelet property, and it was just magical. And I think it was magical in part because the cabin that I was in, I had learned earlier, had been completely put together by Molly, the mom of the Chapelet family, who, along with Don Chapelet, started this all 50 years ago, built this magnificent and really legendary winery. I'm going to put you on the spot, Molly, for a second, because I walked in and I looked at the ceilings and the floors in there. The ceilings were grape stakes. Then I found out you were the one who put that ceiling up. You were the one who put this gorgeous hardwood floor in. And I don't mean, at least as I understand it, it wasn't you guiding some contractor. It was you.
Well,
is that true?
Not completely. I had a little help. But in the first...
Alexa, can you be the truth sayer here?
I do remember my mom putting the grape stakes up herself and also rubbing the floor with coffee grinds to get the right color.
Well, let's straighten it out a little bit. Part of my, I guess, being is I took a class at UCLA one time from Mary. She was wonderful. It was art appreciation, I think. And one phrase stuck with me so much, and it's what you do with what you got. And
wow.
So
oh.
I was given a few cabins that were not finished. They were built by amateurs, not builders, and they were not completed and falling apart. And that's what I had to start with. And so we just tried to upgrade it. And when we saw something that was appealing, if it was an old floor, even though it was rotten, we used it and added to it and made the other part look like the old stuff. You know, that's the kind of thing you do.
Well, Carissa here had taken me over there and opened up the door for me. And I looked in and it was like, I'm literally walking into the pages of Country Living magazine. It really was. It was so well thought out. And I loved how much repurposing I saw in there. And I think you must be the queen of repurposing.
It's,
you know, everywhere I look, as somebody points something out that you did and it was something else in another life, and you give it a new life when it was going to go to the dump and become nothing.
Well, I think being a child of the Depression probably helped. You don't throw things away the way people do today, discard and buy new.
So speaking of Depression, the one thing that I really noticed about this family, and I've noticed about you in the times that I've met you, and certainly Alexa, you all seem to always have a smile on your face. There is an attitude with the Chapelet family that is really, really special. And every story that I hear is a positive upbringing story, and, you know, working together constantly and making the Chapelet project a joyful project. Is that a proper characterization of family life at the Chapelet house?
I hope so. I don't know. I'm sure the children don't always remember it that way because they all had chores and they all had plenty to do. But, you know, living in this place, it's just such a remarkable, remarkable place. And every day when you look out on the view, we're so fortunate because we can see seven ranges of mountains from here. We feel safe and protected. We're so lucky to have all the woods around us, which are filled with native madrones and manzanitas and oaks and bays and wonderful places for them to climb. He did not want to go into the wooded area and carve out more vineyard, which everyone said you could just get a few more acres here. No, he felt that was sacred to leave that. And as it's turned out, it's been a huge benefit to our vineyard to have this native and natural environment.
So what about you, Alexa? You're growing up here on top of this mountain. Did you want to be, Alexa, someplace else? Did you envy kids that were in the city and want to be closer to civilization? Or did you love being here, honestly, as a kid?
That sparks a little bit of a story that I remember. I was 12 and holding a horse, black gold, for the horseshoer. And the horseshoer, Cal Fisher, asked me that same question and said, Alexa, if you could be anywhere in the world and be anything you wanted to be, where would you be? And it was just a simple question. And all I could say is, I'd be right here holding my horse in the vineyard. I said, why would I want to be anywhere else? And that was from a 12-year-old. David, I honestly felt that all my life.
You didn't resent the chores?
No, not at all. Because to me, I knew we had to do the chores, but because of my mom, I always had my head up looking at the beauty, even while I was doing the chores.
What was it like growing up around a lot of people who would go on to become really famous, legendary, trend-setting winemakers, but you went to school with them and played with them? Did you have any idea where this business was going to go? Did you have a sense that this was going to become something very important?
David, for me as a child, that was just my life, to go play basketball at Schramsburg with my friends and all the people that you now talk about, these icons. And that was just my life. And still at this moment, they're still my just good friends. And yes, I know everybody knows Chapelet, and I'm proud of Chapelet's reputation of the wine around the world and the product that my dad produced. But we are still just a family and farmers and love the life that we have. So in that respect, for me, it hasn't changed whether someone has a different title. They are still just my good friends and my family.
Where do you see Chapelet going long after you're gone? What do you truly believe in your heart will happen with this business?
We didn't think about it in the beginning, I don't think. We were here, as everyone has said, to fulfill Don's dream, which was to make a really extraordinary world-class wine. And that was our focus. So today, 50 years later, our focus, I think, is to try to keep this marvelous thing going. I'm hopeful that the third generation will get more involved in the working part of the vineyard and the winery the way our children were. Because as you've heard Alexa and Carissa speak today and the other three more, they would say exactly the same thing. It's just in their blood. And I'm not sure that it's in the blood of the third generation yet, although we have some hopeful young people because three of them have had internships here. That helps them to understand and really be a part of it. But the ones who didn't grow up here, didn't grow up in the vineyard, we need to bring them in more. When they come here, they want to be a part of it. I'd love to see us be one of those wonderful old French families or Italian families that will be 6, 7, 8 generations. That would be my dream. I wish we could get some of our young boys out on the tractors, because, you know, they all love to drive equipment.
Sure.
And if we can just get them on those tractors, I think we've got them. So we got to get those city kids here in the summertime.
Just get the tractor out there. That'll fix them. Listen, I have to go. At least we have to go, because they're only give us an hour to talk on the radio. And I couldn't convince them to give us three today. So I thank you all very, very much for being here. It's such a privilege for you to open your doors and let us not just peek into the winery, but peek inside the lives of the people who make such extraordinary wines. Extraordinary wines almost always come from extraordinary people, and Chapelet certainly has proven that over many, many decades. Thank you all very much.
David, thank you for coming up. Please come again.
Thank you, David. It's really nice to see you again, and I'm so glad that we have rekindled our great friendship.
Our friendship never went anyplace. It was just in the cellar aging.
Thanks so much, David. It's really been a pleasure to have you up here and a pleasure to be on your show.
David, thank you for making that long drive. We're delighted to have you here, and I hope this is one of many interviews we get to do over the years, because the wines are going to keep growing. So are we. I've just got to tell you, thanks so much for coming.
You can count on it. I'm going to move my studio here.
Perfect. We got it made.
All right. That's going to do it for Grape Encounters from the Chapelet family homestead. When you come to the Napa Valley, please come visit Chapelet. Learn more about them. Buy the wines. That's it for Grape Encounters today. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. We'll see you back here at the same time on this amazing radio station.